Accession number 27096, Real 6.
Cliff Hall, Real 6. So, was being lousy actually a problem? Did it, I mean, was it...
Delusion?
No, was being lousy, was that a problem?
Oh, yes. I mean, they're... I mean, when I talk to people about hair about lice, they think it's hair lice. But these were terrible things. They'd be born and they had about a few hours life and then they died sort of thing. But when you had to take your clothes off, and I mean, once in the room, if anybody started it, everybody had took their clothes off at the same time, and they had to turn their shirts out inside out, and you went right down the seams. That's where the legs used to be, and of course they used to hatch out with the heat of your body, and next minute they put their tongues right into flesh, and they suck all your blood out. And you know, the bigger they get, it was easier to catch them, because you get them and you got quite professional at it. It's getting them right and squash them in between your thumbs like that, and your hand will be all covered out with your own blood, sort of thing. It was like that, and you couldn't get rid of them, because I mean you especially in that very cold weather, you used to put your shirt or your clothes out, you wash them and think, you know, and that you let them hang out on the line outside, and they were as stiff as a board, like, you know, with the weather. And you think, oh, that's killed him. But no, as soon as you brought it inside and you put it on, the warmth of your body, they all come alive again, you see. You could get rid of them.
Yeah. Sounds quite nightmarish.
Once your body got, I see they lived on a sick, you know, you're sick when your body's down, you know, right down as far as it could go. But once your body started building up with the Red Cross parcels, so you eventually got rid of them. And when we went to Marburg, we'd been prisoners 2.5 years then in Berlin, and we knew, you know, about the Red Cross and everything like that. And they particularly wanted to do these, you know, they doing things that they shouldn't be doing, like, and we were sticking up for our rights, you see. They wouldn't give us... I mean, first thing you want is, you know, when we had parcels, we wanted to brew up, make a cup of tea. And they said, oh, no, you can't have hot water. We said, well, give us some cold water and we'll brew our own. And they wouldn't even do that. And there was only one little dripping sap in this compound where we are.
Only
one small dripping sap in there. And you couldn't get it out. I mean, chaps are queuing there, you know, where they're... Our old water bottles. What we got, wish you're in the army. We used them and use them as kettles. You know, we used to fill them water and put them in the fire and boil that way. That was the only way you could get hot water. And anyway, they did that, and that's what we mutinied. And then there was at the same time, there were some RAF blokes had been shot down previously, and they were in the compound next to us, waiting for transportation, like, you know. And of course, we had some Red Cross parcels there, and we started throwing over some food for them, like, and trying to get all the information from the outside world. And that annoyed them, like, you know. So we weren't very well liked there. But when we got all that, what he'd done, he decided that we were too dangerous, you know, to say, because there were about 1,000 of us or so there, I see. And they split us all up, and we were sent to different stalags, you know.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So, what were the guards like? I mean, were they older?
Well, there's some all right. There were a lot of them, they were chaps that had been wounded at the front, and had, like, you know, had their treatment in hospital, and then they were given so many weeks, not very much so, of recuperation, like, sort of thing. That's right, yeah. But some of them were all right, I mean, and some weren't, so, you know.
Could you talk to any of them? Did any of them speak English?
Well, yes, you could. But the thing with the Germans, if you had a group of Germans, you and tried to, you know, you trying to get some information out of them, no way. They wouldn't do a thing. The only way you could get anything out of a German is have him on his own. Then he'd come right out with it, like, you know, yeah. But they wouldn't. They were afraid to, you know. They get one of them to report him or something like that, and they'd be for it, like, you know.
Did you ever hear of any cases of homosexuality in the camps?
No.
So it must have gone on.
Could have been
these days, yeah.
Yeah, it could have been, yeah. True.
But if it did, it was obviously.
No, I don't think you were fit enough to worry about anything like that.
Yeah.
No.
Did you ever make any Easter friendly contact or friends with German civilians that you saw when you were out working on your working party? Or
no.
They kept away from you, did they? Or the German civilians?
Well, the ones that were friendly with me, you mean?
Yes. Yeah, you had some that were.
Oh, that's right. Ernest and Martha and Ernie.
Yeah. Do you think?
No.
Do you think they got into trouble for being friendly with prisoners?
Well, no. Ernest used to listen to the BBC overseas program. You see, well, I mean, that was all forbidden. If anybody knew that he was doing that, he'd be for it, like, you know. But he used to listen to it, and then he used to come when we. He came in the morning. He told me about D-Day. I mean, we knew about D-Day before the German civilians knew it, you see. But we used to have a map up in the back of the stack of the wood. We used to have a map hidden up there.
Did you?
And he used to, as soon as we, before we started, we used to go up right there, because we had a toilet up there as well, so it was a good excuse to go and rain there. And he'd get this map out, and he's on about D-Day, and I said, and he said, oh, you know, there were loads of tanks and like Panzers and all the heavy other stuff and all the, you know, lots of troops. And I said, oh, it's another Dieppe. That's what I thought, another Dieppe. He said, no, it's grosser, not big. And anyway, he said, look, don't let on, don't tell anybody. If you tell your mates, don't tell them in private, don't let the Germans hear what you're saying, because it hasn't been, you know, hasn't been told on the public, you know, and over the
German
nerves. And I went up, and of course the Germans couldn't sort of wonder what was going on, because we were going around with smiles on our face, like, you know. Yeah.
Did you realise that was going to be the beginning of the end?
Well, we thought it was, like, you know. But, when it was given out, I mean, that is like the one on Crete there, when they told, you know, after being taken prisoner there. I mean, they told us that, we didn't have nothing much to do with the Germans there, apart from this morning when this German officer had come in the camp, and we got rain, and he said, oh, well, because we heard rumours about Russia, like. And he said, well, he said, you might as well know. He said, declared war on Russia, you know. And he said, well, that's not going to no problem. And he said, Russia be all ours in a fortnight. And they were so confident, like, see, weren't they? Yeah.
Amazing.
That's what you had to put up with. But we did. We gave them, I mean, with our Red Cross parcels, we found a way. With all the, at one time, well, they stopped it all in the end. But when the Red Cross parcels come in, you go and they go to the German. You had to line up, and they got the Red Cross parcel wait for you, and you were allowed to take the dry rations out. Or that was your, you know, for brewing up. Sorry. And then you're allowed 2 tins of something out of it, you see, which you chose. And they'd open it up and see that's what's in it, nothing else, right? But they give us a tin whole. Well, we used to take them back to the hut. Then we carefully used to take the labels off. And perhaps, you know, we might be cross of black was herons or something like that. Well, you might be able to make two, to get two out of that, we're making leaflets.
Oh, right. So you use the paper.
Yeah.
The label,
yeah. No, well, say you, that, you get,
oh, mind the microphone.
Yeah. And it was all like this, the actual contents of the tin, but we used to go to work, and as we were going, you know, walking to the work on there, we gradually throw these things out as go along.
Yeah.
And the people, the Germans were picking it up, and they couldn't understand, they were tin of black and cross was friggin'. What's James got? That got there where they, well, what, where this label got from? Because we were taking them off the tins and we were putting them out, so like putting leaflets out there, like propaganda leaflets. We were doing all that sort of thing, like, you know.
Just to make the Germans think that you were eating better than them.
Well, that's right. Yeah, they were, you know, and then the Germans stopped that, but all kinds of things like that.
Did you have any, I think you mentioned, did you have concert parties or theatre groups or anything?
Was in that last big camp, I'll tell you about. Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is, you had, the men there were all out from good professional jobs, what they had. I mean, there was artists there. There were stage hands, all kinds of chaps in that presentment. And like, we did. Well, I think we did at one time. We used to have the Germans come in and, they used to come in and watch his shows, and I reckon some of those shows that was put on there in that short time that was there was as good as any West End show in London, like, you know.
Did you take part, or
no?
You played the audience?
No, I'm not talented like that, no.
You were an audience.
But we had bands. We had, you know, the Red Cross eventually got instruments out here. We used to do inter-camp sports. You know, where we challenge each camper, you know, boxes and football and things like that.
And they'd let you go to other camps to play?
Well, that's what, until it was more or less stopped, because in Telford, we had some Argyll Southern Highlanders, they were pipers.
Oh, right.
And through the Red Cross, they managed to get a couple of sets of bagpipes come through, you see. Well, we used to do this, these camps that we used to visit each other for football and that sort of thing. They used to, sorry, you'd be home one week, and probably a week or a fortnight after, you'd be away to one of the other camps. And you said after you were allowed, the team was allowed to go, plus so many spectators, you know, some of the chaps. And you used to draw lots for them. But the thing was, we wanted to get the chaps going out smart. We used to sort of, you know, we used to think, well, so-and-so in the next room has got a decent top, like, you know, they get you have your battle dress. Somebody else got a good pair of trousers you can borrow. Somebody got a pair of gaiters, and that, and so you got, say, 12 blokes there, completely fitted out, you know, properly. And you used to use German toothpaste. It was a powder, actually, for Blanco and the, you know, the belts and all that sort of thing. And with the pipes, with the Argyles going out with the pipes and all that. And we used to march up there to the camps. And you used to have the old guards running along the side of us with patched up suits and God knows what and that, and couldn't keep up us. And we were... And that went on for a while until the Germans stopped that, because the commandant, you know, he came out and he said, look, what you've been doing, he says, got to stop. He said, I've had a letter from the German High Command in Berlin to say that you're walking through the streets like troops of occupation.
Which camp was that?
That's in Telford.
So... The big day for you was the 24th of April, 1945.
What's that?
Liberation. 24th of April, 1945. Liberated by the Americans.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Do you remember that day? Can you describe it to me?
Yeah. I was...
What happened?
Well,
Had you had sort of confirmed rumours that the Allies were getting near, or had you heard?
Well, there was. We were still working, of course, I mean, from Leipzig. I mean, we were seeing all the troops, all the civilians streaming from Leipzig, you know, in our wars and that. And eventually, you know, in our timber yard, you know, the work was being sort of stopped there. And then the Germans come in and took over. And they were used, they're getting, well, us as well. We had chopping blocks. And they were beautiful timber. They were sawing all up into small pieces, and they were chopping it. And of course, they'd run out of petrol, and they were converting the truck in the lorries to this. They used to have what kind of a stove in the back of the Mustang, which they, and they said, you know, make their own fuel from the you know, gases, isn't it, to run the engines. And,
so things were getting quite tough for the
Well, that's
Germans.
Right, yeah.
And for you, I imagine, had you been getting
And then when we, that night when we left, you know, we didn't think that was going to be the last night of the, when we left the timber yard, because the old Fritz that ran it, one of the brothers, he's very good on giving us all the offcuts of the timber to take it back, for, you know, to make, you know, in the camp. And we loaded this truck up, you know, one of these little dog carts, and you know, what the Germans use. And we took that back, pulled up with timber. You see, well, when we got back to the camp, when the news was that we were ready to pick up all our gear and we were going moving. We were supposed to be making our way back to Moorburg, you know, where our battalion mate, and where we would be all assembled and handed over, you know, to the, you know, when we were liberated. And we had this truck, and I said to Tom, Chaplain Anderson, I said we'll take that truck. It'll be just the idea of carry our stuff in, you know, and that. And so we carried that. We poured it. So that meant there were six of us. Had all our stuff piled in this truck, and we all took turns of pulling this truck, which was making it quite easy. And we were right. We got so far towards, like, you know, marching to this to Moorburg, and then things started to go wrong because we could hear all the shelling at all the gunfire at Leipzig. We could also hear the Russians the other side, round Dresden. So we didn't know, the guards didn't know what to do with us. Like, he said, we're never going to get to Moorburg. So we marched around a circle for a couple of days, didn't know what to do. And then we got to this little farming village. And we thought, well, it's only good to stay here and just chance our luck, like, see. So I got in there, and there was, I found a barn all full up with straw. I thought, cool, at least we're going to have a good night's sleep here after, because we were sleeping in the open all the way where we were going. So I thought, I'm going to get a shave as well when I'm in there. So I put an old broken bit of mirror up on the inside of the door, and I got shaving gear and a razor, right? And through the mirror, I could see somebody coming in behind me, and I thought, it was one of the guards, because, and all at once, it's probably Yankee, you know, who are you, American, what you guys, who are you, sort of thing, like. And I went around shocked, look, and that's the first time I've seen an American. I mean, American wasn't in the war when we were there. Hey, anybody know who we were and
what
sort of thing?
What did you say?
Well,
do you remember your words?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I mean, you're a bit more in shock. I mean, because it turned out to be there was an American patrol that were, you know, right forward, but they hadn't intended to come that far that night, but they saw this village, so they sort of go in and just see what was in that night, you know, and they come across us. So he said, "You've got any guards here?" I said, "Well, yes, there's one or two guards are scattered around." He said, "Well, what we'll do?" He said, "We're not going to hang about." He said, "We'll disarm a couple of guards so you've got something to, you know, fight with, sort of thing. And you can disarm them all, like, see?" So that's what we done. And, of course, the chaps were weren't sorry in a way, because they knew things weren't going too good for them, like. And in fact, I took all his care, all his gear, because the thing was, I mean, once you were free, there were still pockets of Germans around, you know, and that, and you had to protect yourself. But we went back. When we got ourselves organised, we were all streaming back the way we came. And then we met up with another lot of German soldiers, another patrol. And they said, you know, they wanted to know who we were. And I said, well, we were prisoners of war, but that not now. He said, where are you making for? I said, well, we're going to make it back to Worsden. You know, I said, there's a bridge there. We can get across the river. And that's where the same river is what called us. So, oh, he said, you can't get across the bridge. The bridge has been blown, like, see? So I said, all right. So he said, well, follow the river until you find somewhere else to get across. And we got so far there, and we met up with some more Yanks by then. Wanted to know what we were, and I said, oh, yeah, well. I said, we're going to make our way out here to the bridge. And I knew where the bridge was. It was a paper mill where I'd worked in one of my jobs. He said, don't go up there. He said, there's hundreds out there trying to get, you know, there. He said, he finds somewhere to sleep, and then to go to the morning. And he said, you got anywhere to sleep? I said, no. He said, we'll soon find somewhere. So he banged on a open door and got the Germans out. They all come down scared, like us.
And in a way,
we were sorry for the Germans, because we hadn't got to that stage when we could realise we were free. We've been so, I mean, I was more comfortable with a guard by my side and being on my own, like, you know, it was like that when I come home. And
that was an American soldier who knocked on the door.
Yeah, that's right. He banged on the door, and they come down and he said, go on, get up in their beds. I said, no. I said, I'll sleep dead on the sofa or something like that, you know. And of course, we left our truck outside, like, and of course, in the morning when we come out, somebody had whipped our truck. We didn't have any truck any longer. So what we had, we'd taken some of our personal stuff in with us. Thank God we did, like, you know. And we had a march for the rest of the time, and then we got up to where we wanted to get got across the river. And the Americans there, they all the SAS, they were lining them up and shooting them. There were no problem with them, they.
And then how did you feel about that at the time?
Well, I don't know whether I'm sorry or what. I mean, it's you see so many human people killed, it didn't sort of get to dig in. But the only thing I was sorry, I saw one old boy there that had been a guard at one of the camps, like, and he had been a prisoner in England during the First World War, and he had a nice time when he was in England in that time, and he was in our camp, and he was always, if he anybody felt, if we did that like ourselves, it wouldn't have very much wrong with us. But if there's anything wrong that needed any medical, he'd go down to the local village and see where he can find something for you. Like, it was all that, and he was there with a crowd. And I went up to one of the American officers, and I said, you know, give that chap a decent time. He's all right. I said, he's helped us not anyway. So that's right. So he pushed it aside. So whether he was all right, but what annoyed us was that they were bringing all these big six-wheeler trucks in to transport all these prisoners away, like, and leaving us, to, you know, and that, we wanted to get out of the way, so we went over and said, look, you know, wherever we've had to go, we've had to walk. He says, that's so. So he got them all out of the trucks, and we got on the trucks, and we went to, they took us right down one of the motorways to Magdeburg. That's where we finished up. And we went into the Americans had taken over quite a big size German place, you know, camp or barracks, and they put us in barracks, and they were coming down to bring us all kinds of stuff, you know, and that. And then, you know, they say, come down, all right, you lads, it's, you know, it's chow time, you know, chow, it's meals, dinner, like, you know. And they took us over to this big place, like, was they were using it for a dining room, and they nearly killed us with all the rich food they gave us, like, you know. I mean, they give us these steaks and then going from there. He said, oh, I expect you want some sweet, do you? Like, and they bring in, you know, a great big bowl and they fill it up with half peaches and that sort of thing and pour all this rich cream over it, like, you know. So it would have been all right, of course. And then with that, and then they come out, they give you a mug, say, what do you want, coffee, white or black? And I said, white. It's just the same there. Put the coffee in there and all this cream on top of it as well. In the end, I mean, all went into dysentery. We couldn't get away from the toilets at all. And eventually, I mean, we had one of the American MOs. He started giving us some treatment, but he wasn't stopping it. And he said, in the end, he brought out a little glass file thing with little tiny things. You'll hardly see them, these tablets. He said, now take one of these. If that don't cure it, it never will. Anyway, it was, because, I mean, we no sooner got better in a matter of hours. They took us then to an airport where there was all these decoders, aircraft lying, you know, in there, which are, you know, for their paratroopers. And they loaded us up in there and flew us off. And we didn't know there where we were going. We ran across to Germany. Right, we finished up in Brussels, but on the way over, when we got airborne, we were better then. We were getting starting to feel a bit hungry now, you know, because we hadn't been eating for the last 2 days. So Chet said, well, first he said, well, we better see if there's any toilets here in case we want to, and we still got this dysentery. So he come back, he said, well, is there any toilets here? But he said, there's loads of American K rations there. That says there's, you know, what the, you know, this emergency stuff, what they heat up. So we went down there, and of course there was the Germans, the Americans flying up there. There was only that the pilot and the co-pilot there, and us. But we went down there, and we were getting stuck into all these K rations. And in the, of course, these planes are not pressurized, like, you know, for going very high, and they used to have rubber stoppers in the windows. And as we eating this stuff, so we were crushing these, like, these tins, like your only paper sort of stuff, and pushing them out through these holes in the last thing. So there was a scattered tins being falling on the roads that were going across Berlin over Germany. And we finished up like at Brussels, and that's where we got the we was all right there, because we were in the English, it was all English there, like, you know, they'd done as well.
So tell me, you landed at Brussels.
Yeah.
And I want to know how organised the British were. So was there someone there to meet you?
Oh, yes.
And they took all your names, did they?
Well, not so much that. I mean, they deluged us and deluged us and deluged us. And then they gave us new underwear, a new battle dress and boots and everything like that. And this went on for quite a while, you know. I think we, like you say, they must have taken a few particulars. And they took us in this big hall, and there was all these double-decker beds. And this is well in the night, you know, it was late in the night. And he said to us, he said, look, lads, he said, you've had a hard day, you better go and get your head down, he says, because as soon as we get transport, he says, you're going to be away. So it seems as though we'd only been in there for about couple of hours when all the lights come on. He said, come on, lads. They took us down into another big hall there, and we had bacon and eggs. Oh, dear, wasn't it? And then they went outside, and there was these army trucks up going. And they took us down to the aerodrome, which is, I mean, Waterloo, isn't it? Waterloo. That's where the Battle of Waterloo was there, wasn't it? Went down to the aerodrome there, and there was all these Lancaster bombers all lined up like taxis.
Cliff Hoare, end of Reel 6.